The year is 2006 at the Formula One Grand Prix of Monaco. McLaren's Kimi Raikkonen starts strong, moving from his grid position in third to knock Williams' Mark Webber out of P2 by the second lap. Raikkonen is soon hot on the heels of Renault's champion Fernando Alonso as he sets the fastest lap. Unfortunately, the momentum doesn't hold. By mid-race, after two frustrating laps behind a safety car, Raikkonen's heat shield catches fire, burning through the car's wiring and cutting off the electricity to the engine. His hopes of winning Monaco dashed, the flying Finn is forced to retire the car. But that isn't where the story ends. Instead of returning to McLaren's garage, Raikkonen parks his car at the Sandoval corner and starts walking through the tunnel towards his massive yacht docked nearby. As his rivals continue to battle it out for the title, the TV feed cuts to Raikkonen sitting in the boat's hot tub, his shirt off, with a beer in hand. This epic display of millionaire privilege would prove par for the course for the Finnish driver, who is equally known for his quiet nature and willingness to do whatever the hell he wanted. Kimi Raikkonen is one of the most beloved drivers in Formula One, a celebrated Iceman with an open hatred for doing interviews, and one of the most memeable personalities in the paddock. But outside of his curmudgeonly persona and incredible record, who is Kimi Raikkonen? What makes him tick? And why has he stuck it out in Formula One for so long, considering that he's on record saying that driving is more like a hobby for me? And maybe most importantly, is Kimi F1's most underrated legend? Today on Pass Gas, the epic and long as hell career of the Flying Finn, the Iceman, Kimi Raikkonen.
Pass Gas Podcast, it's about cars, it's not about forks.
Kimberly Raikkonen.
That's not his name. Kimberly Raikkonen.
Kimmy is short for Kimberly. I've been around long enough to know that.
You know Kimmy?
I know him.
Yeah? You go to like junior high together?
We went to junior high in Finland together, yeah.
That's pretty cool, man.
We went to Jorkjevik middle.
Okay, yeah. The fighting polar bears?
The fighting polar bears, yeah.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, our mascot was Thor.
That is strange. That is weird. welcome to Past Gas, everybody. I'm your host, Nolan, joined as always
by... Did you forget your last name?
I don't know. My name's Nolan Sykes, joined today by James Pumphrey.
Toot toot, baby, toot toot.
And there's no Joe in the studio today. Joe is in...
Ireland.
Ireland, that's right. So it's just James and I today, like it used to be, back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah,
Joe's, back in those early episodes. Joe's over there in Ireland eating some famous hot dogs. you know, those famous Irish hot dogs just down in glizzies.
Oh, yeah. I have to imagine. So he went with one of our editors here at Donut, Max, and one of our writers as well, Greg. As well as some other people. I have to imagine that they just started drinking immediately as soon as they got off the plane.
The lack of pictures, we were talking about this before we started recording. The lack of pictures, Max is quite the shutter bug. He likes taking a lot of pics.
He's good at it.
But they're not posting very many. So I think they're just like housed.
Yeah, they're having a good time. James.
Top of the morning. That's what they say over there. Top of the morning to you, Joe. And Joe's like, I need a big old blood sausage breakfast. Cause I tell you what, I tied one on like a horse in heat last night. So they're at like 4 p.m. I bet they're already drunk.
Oh yeah.
they're drunk right now, man.
On a Friday?
Dude, I bet. Oh, yeah. How many hot dogs do you think they've eaten today?
So they're probably kind of burned out on the hot dogs, maybe.
I mean, Irish hot dogs are a little bigger than American ones. That's what they're famous for, is their big hot dogs. I'd say at least 4 or 5 hot dogs a day.
Dang. Wow. I'm so envious.
I know. I love them Irish glizzies.
All right. So today we are talking about Kimi Raikkonen. As we said in the intro, I think Kimi has kind of approached somewhat of meme status in these last couple of years. He's the oldest driver on the grid. He has the record for the longest career, like the most races in F1 history. He's been around for a long, long time.
I didn't know someone broke my record.
Yeah, dude. Sorry, I had to be the one to tell you that. But because maybe I'll say like the last 5 years, Kimi hasn't been in the most competitive car. So what's most notable about Kimi, besides his driving talent, is his demeanor. He's very terse. He's not very flowery with his language. He doesn't talk very much. So I think that for like newer fans, that's what they know about Kimi. But as we'll see in this episode, early Kimi in his career was a force of nature to be reckoned with. This guy, just an insane talent. So I hope if you're like a newer fan to F1, I hope you come away from this episode with a new appreciation for Kimi and maybe get a better picture of why he's stuck around in the sport for so long and that he's more than just sound bites. So without further ado, let's get into the story of Kimi, the Iceman Raikkonen. Did my teeth chattering noise?
That's right. That? Iceman, I am dangerous.
That's hard to do. Do you think Val Kilmer practiced the teeth thing a lot?
Yeah, he's a professional. He definitely, definitely practiced quite a bit.
Kimi Raikkonen was born in Espoo, Finland, a suburb of Helsinki, on October 17th, 1979, to a road builder and an office clerk. Kimi's interest in motorsport began at 3 years old, when he and his brother began playing around with miniature motocross bikes fitted with training wheels. By the time Kimi was 10 years old, he began competitive karting, and by 15, he raced his first race outside of Finland in Monaco. During this drive, his steering wheel broke, and in a very Kimi move, he alerted his mechanic by holding the wheel in the air above his head for the home straight. Awesome. At age 20, following a series of successes in Finland, Norway, and European karting, Kimi jumped into a race and promptly won two British Formula Renault championships in the 1999 season. The following year, Kimi won 7 out of 10 events in the Formula Renault UK Championship. All in all, during the 2 years Kimi raced in Formula Renault, he won 13 out of 23 events. And though he was relatively new to driving, his record impressed Peter Sauber and the Sauber Formula One team, and they decided to give the young Finn a test drive. Just after 23 events in a big car.
Crazy.
Is that a lot?
No, that's like very little.
It's more than I've done.
That's true.
Nobody's asking me.
Just back to the motocross thing for a second. I was watching an interview this morning, and Kimi loves motocross and wishes he could do it more often, but his contract, he's not really sure if his contract allows him to do that.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when like these athletes like ride motorcycles and stuff,
or do like more extreme sports where it's like, is going 220 not enough?
Well, like, I think you build up a tolerance. Yeah. You build up like a dopamine tolerance. So, yeah, going 220 and then all of a sudden you got to jump out of a freaking airplane.
That's one thing I'm not like super into. I'm not into the idea of skydiving.
I want to do it bad. If anyone in Southern California wants to take me skydiving, I want to do it. I don't want to do it alone. I don't want to be strapped to no man or nothing. All right. I want to do it alone. PassGas@DonutMedia.com.
In September of 2000, Kimi took to the track to test with the Sauber Formula One team. On just the second day of the test, Kimi lapped half a second quicker than Pedro Diniz, one of the regular Sauber drivers. Impressed by his pace and measured approach to driving, Sauber signed the 21-year-old Kimi for the 2001 season, despite critics, including FIA President Max Mosley, voicing concerns over granting an F1 super license to an inexperienced driver such as Kimi.
They call it a super license?
They're called super licenses. That's right.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Normal series, you got to get a license, and that's usually just like a formality. There is some testing here and there. Like, you got to have like a couple of days at like a high performance driving day or whatever. Instructors have to sign off. But a super license is like, you got to have points. Like, you got to get enough points for a super license, and you can get points by, you know, doing well in lower series, you know, Formula 3, Formula 2. IndyCar doesn't really count for a lot of super license points. Super Formula. Yeah.
That's surprising. That's a professional sport.
Yeah, it, for some reason, well, because it's outside the FIA.
Copy.
Yeah. Anyway, despite the debate and the politics, Kimi let his driving do the talking for him. At his debut race at the 2001 Australian Grand Prix, Kimi finished sixth and scored a career championship point for Sauber. It was at this first Grand Prix that Kimi debuted his now infamous method of race preparation. He took a nap until 30 minutes before the race. This kind of chill-as-hell way of warming up to compete in a crazy dangerous sport is primo Kimi. He's known for taking a nap right before, and sometimes even inside of his car while he's sitting in the garage. In his own straight-to-the-words point, "It's normal. I always sleep before the race. There's a little bit of time. I like sleeping."
Excuse me, do you know Iceman?
Yeah, where's the Iceman?
Iceman is sleeping. Sorry.
Kimi finished his first year with 4 points scoring finishes and 8 finishes in the top 8 for a total of 9 points. Sauber happily ended the season in 4th place in the Constructors' Championship. Unfortunately, they couldn't keep Kimi for the 2002 season as McLaren's Ron Dennis came a-calling. We love that Ron Dennis and McLaren, who were searching for a successor to their retiring 2-time champion, fellow Finn Mika Häkkinen. I love Finnish names, dude.
Dude, they're so sick. They sound like an axe.
The team was torn between Kimi and his Sauber teammate, Nick Heidfeld. But according to Dennis, Häkkinen himself would offer his recommendation via rhyme, stating, "If you want to win, get the Finn." Eventually, the team agreed and selected Kimi. It was around this time that Ron Dennis gifted Kimi with his nickname, the Iceman, due to both his Finnish background and icy cold persona.
That's what they, it's so funny. That's what they call Osbo too.
Uh-huh.
Is the Iceman. But he's like not icy. He's like...
No, he's like a pretty friendly guy.
Yeah, he's like a pretty warm dude. But yeah. I think it's just like Americans are like, it's so cold over there.
Yeah.
You must be like we're so influenced by...
We love Top Gun.
The Mighty Ducks. Or, yeah. You know, like, just like, oh yeah, you must be a real Iceman. It's like, no, I'm just like, I'm a guy. I'm mad. Whoa, I can feel it. I can feel it.
And I think Osbo's lived here for a pretty long time too, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, you're just gonna take like the stereotype of where I'm from.
Ice in like the veins, most, ice in the veins.
Like the most basic thing from where I'm from and name me after it.
Yeah. Well, hey, there goes the dirt man.
Yeah. Oh, James, you're from Kentucky. You're the Derby man.
Grass man.
The grass man. Oh, here comes the grass man.
What does that even mean?
So in 2002, Kimi took the grid for McLaren and placed third at his first race of the season. Though McLaren suffered from numerous mechanical issues over the course of the year, Kimi still finished the season with 24 points and 4 podiums, and McLaren received third in the Constructors' Championship. And that season, they were actually using... They were using like a more evolved version of their 2002 car. So it wasn't even like a 2003 car. And that was just Kimi's skill coming into play.
Dude, he's been racing forever. I was in high school.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Kimi came back to McLaren in 2003 and once again managed to place third in the first race of the season, the Australian Grand Prix, despite starting 15th on the grid. And this is before DRS too. Kimi is known for his ability to come back from a difficult grid placement. He won his first race after starting 7th in Malaysia. The 2003 season was tough for McLaren, since they used their 2002 chassis, like I mentioned, yet Kimi excelled due to strategic choices he made during his drive. Despite engine problems during the Australian Grand Prix, Kimi successfully defended second position from Rubens Barrichello and lost by only less than a second in Monaco. Kimi spent the season neck and neck with Michael Schumacher in one of the closest seasons of the decade. By the end of the year, Kimi finished second in the Drivers' Championship, just 2 points behind Schumacher. And McLaren finished third in the Constructors' Championship yet again. I think, to my point earlier about like Kimi kind of being a meme today, is like this guy was in his third season in F1 and it was challenging. Not just like sort of challenging, but like full court pressing Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, the Michael Schumacher.
The Michael Schumacher. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, go give it a whirl after this one, and you'll see why that's a big deal. Unfortunately, 2004 wasn't great for McLaren. there were repeated engine breakdowns, and Kimi only managed to claim a single point in the first seven races. However, he still managed to end the season in seventh with four podiums, and despite the disappointing season, Kimi was considered a rising star. Ross Brawn and John Tott of Ferrari openly discussed considering him in the future, and pundits believe 2005 would be filled with great on-track battles. Kimi also founded his own Formula 3 team with manager Steve Robertson, titled Raikkonen Robertson Racing, otherwise known as Double R.
Definitely should be called Triple R.
Yeah, that's kind of an oversight. Which would compete in Formula 3 in 2005. Finally, in his personal life, he married his first wife, a Finnish fashion model and former Miss Scandinavia, Jenny Dahlman. 2005 comes along now, James. McLaren has now developed the MP420, which is one of their best cars probably ever. The chassis was designed by names like Adrian Newey, which you might recognize, Patty Lowe, Pat Fry. These guys, like, this is an insane car. It is easily the fastest on the grid. You've got Kimi behind the wheel. It is a match made in heaven. This thing is a weapon. Unfortunately, the entire season is marred with tire and engine issues. It's the best car on the grid. It's horribly unreliable. Breaks down all the time. So, Kimi publicly announced that he would leave McLaren in 2006 after his contract was up, unless they could find, quote, a better way to just make sure that the car is very reliable. He then went on to win the Hungarian Grand Prix from the most handicapped qualifying position, something no other driver had previously managed to do, and finished second in the Drivers' Championship. If the car had been more reliable, it's very, very likely that Kimi would have won his first championship in 2005.
Well, yeah, you got second place with a car that wouldn't finish.
Mm-hmm. Then, after the Italian Grand Prix in 2006, Michael Schumacher announced his retirement, and Ferrari announced that he would be replaced by Kimi to the tune of $41 million a year. Now, this is when Kimi really starts to Kimi. Allow me to explain. Though his time at McLaren was marked by unreliable cars, Kimi still managed to finish second in the championship twice. He won nine races and finished on the podium on 36 different occasions. That's very consistent. However, his time on track wasn't the only thing Kimi was known for. He quickly built a reputation as a difficult interviewee who absolutely loathed the limelight that came with being a Formula One driver. His press conferences and TV interviews came under public scrutiny as he tried to hide under his baseball cap. He never smiled and answered questions in a blunt and monosyllabic manner. It didn't help that his speaking voice is best described as mumbly and monotone. According to Kimi, his distinctive voice is due to a bike accident that occurred when he was five, where he slammed his neck into the handlebar and damaged his vocal cords. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeesh.
But do you think that's possible?
I mean, I'm no throat doctor.
That's not what I heard.
That's right. Yeah, give me that.
When off the track and out of the immediate public eye, Kimi seemed to be an entirely different person. At the time, he was known for drinking a lot, womanizing, and just being an all-around playboy. In 2004, the Spanish media reported that Kimi was found outside a nightclub, passed out, and embracing an inflatable rubber dolphin. When questioned about his bender, he said, "I'm sorry, I had a few drinks and danced, why not?" During the 2006 Monaco Grand Prix, after his car caught fire, Kimi decided not to return to the paddock, but instead walked straight from the racetrack to his personal yacht, whipped off his shirt, and joined his best friends in what announcer James Allen called
their own body weight in champagne and beer!
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
One of his better and most infamous moments of 2006 was when he was asked by an interviewer why he missed a performance by Pele, and he responded truthfully,
"I was having a..."
However, none of this debauchery really mattered. As Kimi himself put it, "What I do in my private life doesn't make me drive any slower."
Nice. Hell yeah, dude. You know what I hate? Public scrutiny.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You hate being scrutinized?
I hate being scrutinized by the public.
Yeah.
Yeah. For his first season with Ferrari, Kimi kicked it off hard. He got pole position in Australia, set the fastest lap, and became the first driver since 1989, shouts to Taylor Swift, to win his first Grand Prix driving a Ferrari.
Yeah, hadn't been done since Nigel Mansell, I think.
Kimi spent the rest of his season battling with McLaren's rookie, a little guy named Lewis Hamilton, and champ Fernando Alonso. Nolan loves Fernando.
Love that Nando, dude.
In Hungary, he qualified in fourth, but started in third when Alonso was penalized. During the race, he pressured Hamilton, yet had to settle for second place, driving 0.7 seconds behind Hamilton. He set the fastest lap, though, and said after the race,
I was so bored behind Hamilton. I wanted to see how quick I could have been.
Cool, man. Have fun being bored behind him. Dork. I just did a video on Lewis Hamilton, so I'm
your Lewis team Hamilton
boy.
Yeah.
And he was just on Desus and Miro.
He's great. I haven't seen that yet.
Dude, he's great. I love that guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. And like a good guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Going into the final race of this season, the Brazilian Grand Prix, Kimi was 7 and 3 points behind Hamilton and Alonso, respectively. You may remember this from Past Gas episode number 90, Hamilton versus Alonso. But 2007 was the first three-way battle in the final race of the season since 1986. 21 years.
Wow.
You may also remember that Kimi won by a single point and took the 2007 Formula One Drivers' Championship. On the podium, the Iceman finally offered more than his typical monosyllabic response.
I'm very happy. I came from pretty much nothing, but my family, friends, and sponsors helped me get here. People will probably look differently at me and make up more stories about me, but I'm going to lead my life as I want, and that's it.
Cool. Kimi's 2007 title is still the most recent driver's championship win for Ferrari. However, the F1 track wasn't the only place Kimi was a winner in 2007. In March of that year, a week before his Ferrari debut, Kimi won a Finnish snowmobile race.
Hell yeah.
Under the pseudonym James Hunt.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's pretty funny.
That's cool.
For those of you guys that are unfamiliar with James Hunt, he was the 1976 world champ whose Playboy lifestyle allegedly mirrored Kimi's. So Kimi used it to poke fun at the media sensationalization of his private life. Later in that same year, he used the moniker again when he entered a powerboat race with two friends, with all three dressed in gorilla suits.
I love it.
They won a prize for best dressed crew. When asked about the gorilla suits, Kimi simply smirked and said he couldn't confirm it was him before admitting,
it was just a boat race and we went for fun. Ha ha.
Dude, I'm sorry. Kimi Räikkönen's a... he is, dude. By definition, is a...
In his younger days, I'll agree with you.
He's like a... Who are the... He's like a TikTok kid.
Okay.
Like, he's like oh, everyone's like just like... Everyone's like scrutinizing me. It's like, well, you're doing dumb... So why don't you just like leave me alone? It's like, because you're... famous. The job that you chose, there's like 14 of you.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 14 guys, and like only like three that anyone cares about, you know.
I love best dressed crew is only a prize they could give at a powerboat race.
Well, we won best dressed crew.
We did?
Yeah, that dance.
That's
remember?
Yeah, I do.
In 2008, Kimi won his first Grand Prix of the season in Malaysia on the fifth anniversary of his first victory on the track. In Spain, he took the 15th pole of his career and the first of 2008 and overtook Mika Häkkinen in the list of total number of fastest laps and podium finishes, thus becoming the highest ranked Finnish driver in those stats.
Oh, yeah.
Kimi ended the year in third for the Drivers' Championship with the DHL Fastest Lap Award for the second year in a row, as he set 10 fastest laps out of 18 throughout the season.
He's a fast man.
He's fast, drives fast. Of course, the season wasn't without its controversies. Before the British Grand Prix, Kimi pushed a noted photographer, Paul Henry Cahier, to the ground as he lined up a close-up. Kimi's manager, Steve Robertson, claimed Kimi was provoked by Cahier touching him with his lens and stepping on his belongings.
I see.
But the photographer disputed this version of events. Another altercation occurred on the track at the Canadian Grand Prix. Rival Lewis Hamilton failed to see the red light at the end of the pit lane and hit Kimi from behind with enough force to take him out of the race. However, instead of getting upset, Kimi got out of his car, walked over to Hamilton, calmly pointed out the giant red light, and walked back to his team's paddock.
I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
2009 was a bummer year for Ferrari, where rivals Red Bull and Braun were killing it. Kimi's only win was in Belgium, where he earned the moniker the King of Spa. That's what we call you.
Because I do love my massages.
Love massages and steam. After his fourth victory of the last five at that track, he finished the season in sixth in points. However, the most interesting story of 2009 occurred during the Malaysian Grand Prix. Torrential rain halted the race on lap 33 with drivers parked in their cars on the grid waiting for a restart. Dude, I bet that sucks.
Yeah.
Dude, you deserve $45 million a year. You gotta sit in the rain like a frog. Rather than waiting in his car alongside his competitors, Kimi dried off and changed and then enjoyed an ice cream on live TV. This may have been a little too frustrating for Ferrari because at the end of the season, they announced Kimi's departure and replacement with Alonso, despite Kimi having a contract for 2010. Don't worry. He got paid $10 million if he secured a seat on another team, but $17 million if he opted to sit out the season.
After being released by Ferrari, Kimi wanted to race for McLaren alongside Hamilton, but the negotiations failed. Man, that would have been a fascinating team. He was briefly discussed for Mercedes, but they opted for Schumacher and Nico Rosberg. Toyota F1, before pulling out of Formula One, offered him a contract to replace Timo Glock, but he refused the contract because he wanted to drive a better car, and Toyota wasn't offering enough money. Then, in November of 2009, Kimi's manager confirmed that he was out for the next season, stating, quote, "The choices in Formula One for the next season were McLaren or nothing. Kimi and McLaren could not reach an agreement, so he will not drive at the Formula One level for at least the next season." Where could the grumpy flying Finn head next? Rallying. In January of 2009, Kimi debuted as a rally driver at the Arctic Lapland Rally and finished in 13th place. And by the end of the year, Kimi announced that he would shift from Formula One to the World Rally Championship for the 2010 season as a full-time driver for the Citroën Junior Team, driving a Red Bull-sponsored Citroën C4 WRC with co-driver Kai Lindstrom. While rallying, he did all right. Also, it's spelled K-A-J. I'm just going to say Kai, all right? I don't know
what
else. It's not Kaj. Kimi became the second driver in history to score championship points in both Formula One and in the World Rally Championship, and he ended the season in 10th place as the best rookie that year. In 2011, Kimi entered under his own team, Ice One Racing, in a Citroën DS3 WRC. He finished the season with 34 points, but still placed 10th in the championship. Ice One Racing was later extended into the Motocross World Championship in 2011 and consisted of MX1 rider Tony Erickson and MX2 rider Lud Soderberg. Then, the next summer in 2011, Kimi did something a little unexpected. He joined NASCAR.
Yeah!
He signed a deal with Toyota team Kyle Busch Motorsport to run a limited schedule in the Camping World Truck Series and debuted in the North Carolina Education Lottery 200 at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Education Lottery 200. Jesus. And they wonder why nobody watches this sport. The Education Lottery 200. Cool, guys.
He did it at Charlotte. And he did pretty well for someone who's never done oval racing before. He finished the race in 15th, which is pretty amazing. Not bad. He also raced the same track May 28th of that year, but he got a penalty for speeding in the pit lane. And later that month, Kenny tested Robbie Gordon's car at Infineon Raceway, a road course, in hopes of securing a two-car team, but he crashed the car during the test, so the deal fell through. Unfortunately, I definitely recommend checking out Kimi's truck series exploits, though. It's pretty pretty entertaining. And cars is fast.
By the end of the 2011 F1 season, it was confirmed that Kimi would be returning to the grid with Lotus Renault for 2012. That first year back with Lotus was ultimately a decent season, but with a lot of middling results. Kimi first won at Abu Dhabi, the first Grand Prix race Lotus had won since 1987, and ended the season in third for the Drivers' Championship.
That's pretty damn good for his first season back with Lotus, I'm going to say it, okay?
Yeah, he had to figure out how to turn right again. Although he had a strong season with Lotus, 2012 is probably best known for the radio exchange that would become an infamous internet meme. During the race in Abu Dhabi, yes, the one that he won, his engineer let him know that Alonso was behind him and that he would update him with the pace.
Okay, Kimi, next car behind you is Alonso. Alonso, 5 seconds behind you. I'll keep you updated on the gap. I'll keep you updated on the pace.
In response, Kimi replied,
"Just leave me alone, I know what to do."
The engineer then reminded him to work all four tires, and Kimi replied,
"Okay, Kimi, we need to keep working all four tires, please. Keep working all
Yes, I'm doing all the time. We don't have to remind everybody."
This was also the year that Kimi spent 16 days drinking with his friends from dawn till dusk, swimming in a pool fully clothed and twisting his ankle trying to imitate soccer legend Diego Maradona, which led him to miss a test with Lotus. This is also not coincidentally the year that his marriage with Jenny Dahlman began to fall apart.
Oh, man.
Regardless, he still tried to rush home after races. After the German Grand Prix, where he placed third, he fell over a fence and onto a car as he attempted to a shortcut to the parking lot.
Awesome.
In the first race of the 2013 season in Australia, Kimi started from seventh and managed to eke out a win. He later described the victory as one of his easiest wins due to his two-stop strategy when others took three. Weeks later, after the Italian Grand Prix, Kimi announced he would not continue with Lotus and would join Ferrari for the 2014 season. Before the following Singapore Grand Prix, it was revealed that Kimi had not been paid by Lotus for the whole season and that this was the reason that he was leaving for Team Ferrari.
Part of his contract with Lotus was that he would be given $50,000 for every point that he scored. Lotus agreed because they wanted to score some points, but they didn't think it'd be that many points. So they knew that they could afford it. But it's Kimi Raikkonen, and he scored enough points that the bonus payment that they owed him was $20 million. And they didn't have that in their budget to pay him, so that's why he left.
Well, you got to pay people.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks later at the Indian Grand Prix, his teammate Romain Grosjean caught up on the fourth last lap, but was not able to immediately pass him. It was at this point that Lotus trackside operations director Alan Permain had a heated radio exchange with Kimi, telling him,
"Kimi, get out of the way."
Kimi, as one could guess, responded with further profanity.
"Don't shout there.
The press had a field day questioning his relationship with the team. He had already announced that he was leaving because they didn't pay him. His relationship with the team sucks.
Yeah, not good.
They're stiffing him for $20 million. In the following Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi, Kimi didn't show up for the usual Thursday media events and only left his home the last moment to make it to the race after considering not racing at all. That Friday, Kimi publicly threatened that he would not race with Lotus unless the salary dispute was resolved. By this point, Kimi was owed millions of dollars. Then in Saturday's qualifying, he had to retire on the first lap due to an immediate collision that broke his right front suspension. After he recovered, he left the circuit and returned to his hotel while the race continued. After the Abu Dhabi race, it was confirmed that investment group Quantum Motors had acquired a share in the team and could provide more financial security. Thus, Kimi and Lotus reached a provisional agreement on the salary dispute, and Kimi would race for the team during the remainder of the season. Despite this agreement, a week before the U.S. Grand Prix, Kimi opted to have elective back surgery and ended up missing the rest of the team.
Wow. You got to know when to hold them and when to fold them. That's pretty petty, man.
I am sorry. I don't know, my back, it hurts. I gotta have a surgery. I don't know
to get a surgery because
we'll get back to more past guests, but right now a word from our sponsors. In 2014, Kimi finally partnered with Fernando Alonso at Ferrari. He was back.
Back at the team. Back with the boys.
Back with the boys.
Off the track and with his divorce now finalized, he quickly got engaged to fitness and underwear model Mina Marie Mintu Virtanen. And despite his happy home life, 2014 was the first time since his rookie year that Kimi did not finish on the podium. Throughout the season, Kimi struggled with the Ferrari's lack of turn-in corner entry and the feel of the new brake-by-wire system. When questioned about this, he said, "We tried to somehow balance it out and tried to have a front end on the car, but it is very, very difficult. I hate it when there's no front end on the car. I hate it." Kimi's driving style, he's really aggressive with the turn-in, so he'll wait to the last moment. And if the car's not set up correctly, this means that this kind of driving style can produce a lot of understeer. And he struggled with that a lot with this car. Understeer can be good depending on your driving style. But if you're a guy that really dives into corners like that, it's not going to work.
Take it outside. It's not going to work. Okay? I don't want to hear it. All right?
In 2015...
Get over it. It's not going to work, okay? Maybe if you have a different driving style, maybe it'll work. But if you got to get down in the corners like my boy Kimberly, if you got to get down in the corners like my boy, it's not going to work, okay? Get over it. I'm sick of talking about it, okay? Call the cops. I don't care.
Whoa. It's fine.
Call them.
I'm not going to do that.
I'll kill you and them loud-ass barking dogs. I'm sick of talking about it, okay? Sometimes, sure, understeer will work if you drive a certain way, okay? But if you're like my boy Kimi and you like to dig up in them corners, it's not going to freaking work, so drop it, all right?
All right.
Because sick of talking about it.
All right.
And I don't want to freaking hear about it anymore.
In 2015, Kimi became a dad when his wife Mintu gave birth to their first son, Robin. And on the track, Kimi was partnered with Sebastian Vettel for the season.
Seb Vett.
Kimi also claimed that he would probably retire at the end of 2015, perhaps due to his new responsibilities at home, despite his manager indicating that he was heading towards a contract extension. They ended up extending, with Kimi stating, quote, "He's dreaming on," as he confirmed that he wanted Ferrari to be the team where he ended his career. Kimi was happier with the car in 2015 as well, and claimed his first podium since the 2013 Korean Grand Prix in Bahrain. Ferrari team boss Maurizio Arrivabene praised Kimi for showing, quote, "what a race animal he is."
What a race animal he is.
And Kimi ended the season in fourth for the Drivers' Championship. Pretty amazing. I forget about that. Both 2016 and 2017 were fairly unremarkable. In 2016, Kimi did manage to outqualify his teammate Vettel 11-10 and achieve the 700th podium in Ferrari's Formula One history at the Russian Grand Prix. In 2017, Kimi scored his first pole position in 129 races at the Monaco Grand Prix, qualifying 0.04 of a second faster than Vettel to become the sport's oldest pole sitter since 1997. Kimi ended the season in fifth place and renewed his contract with Ferrari for the 2018 season. He also finished 2017 with a second child, a daughter named Rihanna. According to Kimi...
Kimi Räikkönen is Rihanna's dad?
Yes, James. According to Kimi, quote, "life changes automatically when you have kids." And although Kimi definitely still loved to sleep and party, the Iceman spends most of his time with his kids, whom he lovingly refers to as the Ice Cubes.
Oh, my God.
He calls his kids the Ice Cubes, James.
No.
He's the Iceman, and they're little Ice Cubes.
I was literally about to be like, actually, like, I love to sleep and party, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe we could be friends. But then when you're like, he calls his kids the Ice Cubes, I was like, this guy, no way. If I partied with Kimi Räikkönen, I'd probably smack him in the face.
He'd probably drink you under the table, dude.
Dude, he weighs like 110 pounds.
I know, but he's Finnish.
That's not a thing. I'm American.
The Finns like to party.
Dude, I like to party and sleep too.
Are we going to have an argument over who could sleep and party better? I guess I started it.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And you're my boy, dude. You never even met this man.
That is true.
Why are you defending him?
Because I like him.
You like him more than me?
I didn't say that.
Well, why are you choosing his side? I think I've earned your loyalty.
You have.
Pretty much changed absolutely your entire life.
Pretty much, yeah.
Mentor, now I do. Coach.
I'm just saying, look.
Gave you a shot. Formed yeah you.
Formed me?
I helped chisel you out of okay the beautiful marble that showed up at Donut 4 years ago.
That's true. That's true.
You know what I mean? What the fuck has Kimi Räikkönen ever done for you?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Comparison.
Not a lot. Not a lot.
I'm just saying, I would love to be there. Let's say we're at Job's house in that little bar he has on his side.
No way. I'm not fucking hanging out with Kimi Räikkönen at Job's house. Kimi
okay, what's the up venue? What's the venue?
Chateau Marmont.
Okay, you're at Chateau Marmont.
We got a bungalow at the Chateau. We're at the bar.
It's probably your
Father
birthday.
John Misty's there. Nick Thune is there. We're playing piano in the Chateau lobby. I got a bungalow out back, poolside. Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice.
Yeah. That's where I'm at in my life, Nolan.
Yeah. And then Kimi Räikkönen shows up and challenges you to a... Actually, no. He doesn't really... You guys don't really challenge each other, but I'm there kind of like egging it on.
Yeah. Because you're a starter. It's kind of your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, all that's on r/Nolan.
r/Nolan.
Is there an r/Nolan or is he talking about Nolan?
That'd be kind of funny.
Might be Christopher. Yeah, it's Christopher Nolan.
Anyway, one of Kimi's most viral moments occurred during the 2018 season during the Hungarian Grand Prix when Kimi and his Ferrari engineer got lost in translation with one another. The Ferrari had a number of issues with its watering system during the race, which culminated in his engineer telling him,
"You forgot to connect the drink pump."
"Yes, confirmed."
"Is the drink? Is it on now?" "Okay, I have no idea."
"We forgot to connect, Kimi. You will not have the drink, sorry."
"Is it on or not? The drink?"
"No, Kimi.
Okay, no.
No, you will not have the
drink." No. "Is the switch on or not?"
You mean the slow button?"
No. "Is my drinking, is it emptying the bottle or not?"
No, Kimi, no. You will not have the drink."
At the Italian Grand Prix, Kimi took pole position and broke Juan Pablo Montoya's 14-year-old record to set the fastest lap ever recorded in F1 history with an average speed of 163.786 miles per hour. His race, though, was compromised by Mercedes blocking him after a pit stop, but he finished second and scored his 100th podium finish, becoming the fifth driver to ever do so. He also won the U.S. Grand Prix and became the oldest race winner since Nigel Mansell in 1994 and the 13th oldest F1 race winner ever. This victory also made Kimi the most successful Finnish driver of all time in terms of race wins and broke the record for longest gap between Grand Prix wins, which was 113 races, and the record for biggest gap between the first and last career wins, which is 5,691 days. This coincidentally came on the 11th anniversary of his 2000 F1 World Championship. And finally, by the end of 2018, Kimi finished third in the Drivers' Championship. Pretty dang sweet.
Despite Kimberly's prior statement that he wanted to finish out his career with Ferrari, he decided to join Sauber, now rebranded Alfa Romeo Racing, for a 2-year contract from 2019 to 2021. If his stats and team swaps haven't completely jarred you by now, you may remember Sauber as the team he debuted with. In his first year with the team, Kimi scored 31 points before the summer break and then endured a 7-race pointless streak, ending the season in 12th place, a career low, until 2020. In 2020, Alfa Romeo had one of the slowest cars of the season, and the team was in the back of the grid against Haas and Williams. Kimi was the highest finishing driver among his group in 9 of the season's 17 races and was highest finishing Ferrari-powered driver on 4 occasions.
Wow.
Despite ending in 16th with only 4 points, he won the FIA Action of the Year for his opening lap at the Portuguese Grand Prix, where he overtook 10 cars from P16 to P5.
That's experience, baby. It was a wet race or a wet start, so that's how he's able to do that.
And as of this recording, 2021 has also been somewhat disappointing, especially considering that it will be Kimi's last season on the Formula One grid. He was one of the few Formula One drivers to test positive for COVID and did so on the weekend of the Dutch Grand Prix just after he announced his retirement. Kimi scored his first points of the season in Azerbaijan with more points in Hungary and Russia. Hopefully, Alfa Romeo can turn it around for the end of the season, but that seems unlikely. The only great thing to come out of the 2021 season is the return of Kimi's issues with the drink at the Monaco Grand Prix when...
Again, the drink pipe came loose from the formation lap, and it's been behind my back the whole race, the filter. So I don't know how it's so difficult to put it connected correctly.
Of course, it is ironic. 2021 is one of the best seasons I've certainly ever seen in Formula One, but kind of lackluster for the Iceman. Ice to meet you. Easily the most memorable and memeable driver in the paddock, Kimi Raikkonen may just be Formula One's most underrated legend. I would say he's appropriately appreciated, though. Kimi has participated in 1/3 of all Formula One races. At least at the time of this recording, he's had 345 entries in 1,049 Grand Prix since 1950 and is ranked 3rd in the all-time fastest laps. And as we mentioned before, Kimi has finished on the podium more than 100 times, one of only 5 drivers to do so, with 21 Grand Prix victories and a record 341 starts. Defined by his unquenchable thirst for speed and the drink, as well as excellent reflexes and steady control, Kimi has spent the majority of his career annoyed with his treatment in the media, as well as the politics of being a Formula One driver. On the latter, Kimi has said, quote, "Sometimes in Formula One there is politics, and the there is stupid." In the same 2013 article, Lotus team principal Eric Boyer summed Kimi up pretty well as someone, quote, "doing pretty much whatever he wants."
Yeah.
Kimi is famous for summarizing his driving career at the end of an episode of Drive to Survive as...
"It's more like a hobby for me, so obviously I don't need to do it if I don't want."
Hobby or not, we will miss having Kimi Raikkonen in the paddock, and I can't wait to see if he pops up anywhere else. Hopefully, as James Hunt. There you go, folks.
Hobby or not is a great name for like a hobby store. Hobby or not.
Hobby or not. That's the story of Kimi Raikkonen.
Kimberly Raikkonen.
Hopefully you have a greater appreciation for the man after this episode. James, do we have any fan mail this week?
Yeah.
All right.
We got a person named CE. I don't know what that stands for. Maybe Chris Evans? Hey, Donut Media. I'm Captain America. I love the content, the YouTube, the podcast, the merch. I love it all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I recently started listening to Past Gas, and I love the narrative style and wanted to suggest a topic for a potential episode.
Okay.
I know you guys have done up to speeds on the Mustang Cobras. However, I wanted to suggest diving a bit deeper into the story, how the 03 SVD Cobra came into existence. There's a great book called Iron Fist, Lead Foot about the struggles John Colletti had to go through to make it into one of the best Cobras ever produced. It's something I think that would make a great episode. Thanks again for all your content. Keep on keeping on. Well, thank you, Chris Evans, Captain America. I really like these cars, and I think we missed the boat on them because now they're really expensive.
They are very expensive. I think that's a good idea. I've talked to John Colletti before for Wheelhouse, so maybe we can get back in touch with him and see about this episode. We could maybe do that. If there's something you want to say about any of our episodes, maybe you want to admonish me or suggest a future topic, email us at passgas@donutmedia.com. We might even read it on the show like we just did with CE's little message.
Chris Evans,
thank you.
Admonish Nolan.
Yeah, man, I need to be humbled a little bit.
Yeah,
I've been feeling too good about myself.
Bring you back down to earth.
Yeah, I need to get back in that pit of despair. Thank you very much for listening to Past Gas. This is a fun one. Tell a friend about the show. You know, that's how we grow. Leave a review if you will. We're trying to be that number one automotive podcast. We're number two right now.
We're trying to get. Not even going to mention number one.
We are trying to be number one. So we'd really like your help in that. James has got a new show, a new podcast coming soon. So keep an eye out for that. I was sort of in the office when it was being recorded, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it.
You love the cast.
I love the cast. I love James.
Audio format. I love you. I love you, Nolan.
Thank you, James. I love you back.
I love the microphones.
Okay.
I love the audience. I love when people follow you on social media at Nolan J. Sykes.
Whoa,
people
I love me
them. On social media at James Pumphrey. I love when people subscribe to our YouTube channel, Donut Media. I love when they go to donutmedia.com and buy merch, because we have a new merch product every week now. I love when they sign up for our freaking mailing list so they don't miss anything and they get a discount. I love that we have a points program now. Some more merch you buy, the more points you earn, and you get points just for signing up, and you get points on your birthday, and you get discounts on our sweet, sweet products. When people join our membership program, the Donut Underground. I love that.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for listening. Be kind.
Toot, toot, baby, baby, toot, toot. Wink, wink, nation, where is your God now?
All right, see you later.